This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 467, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 467. We were gone for like a month.
Didn't feel like it.
It didn't, but we were. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. Joining me is Josh Flanagan.
Hello, everyone.
And Paul Montgomery is off on secret assignment. He will be back next week. But we're back after taking our winter break to spend time with our families. Yes, we have those things. We're not robots. So, what are you going to do?
I don't know, but I bet we were better at ad-libbing in the past. I bet that I think that's a muscle you have to work.
You know, there weren't even any comics last week to talk about, so we couldn't have even done a show if we wanted to.
There wasn't. I read some. I've been reading. I didn't want to fall behind.
I had two comics to read last week.
Yeah. I don't remember what they were, and I read them all out of order, so I don't know what came out what week. And a lot of the ones from this week I read a long time ago.
So, we are a fanboy. And we like comics. And every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best book they read. We call it the pick of the week. Talk about that book. Wow. This is month off script reading. We talk about that on this here podcast along with other books of the week, other topics of interest. Sometimes there's goofy nonsense, though. I make no promises. There is no money back guarantee. Actually, there is. You can have your money back. Before we get to the show, quick reminder and a warning, this is a review show. We will be talking about, there's no money back guarantee. We will talk about things that happened in this week's book, so if you're worried about spoilers, pause the show and come back when the coast is clear. Josh, yeah. You had the first pick of 2015.
I did, and that is going to go to The Fade Out, number 4, from Image Comics, Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips, and is Val Staples still their guy? Nope, Elizabeth Breitwasser. Nope. I should have known that. What does Val Staples think of that? Anyway, so this is the fourth installment of this film noir that takes place in Hollywood just before HUAC, but just after the war. This fits into a version of War Corner, I guess.
Well, people are informing, so is it before HUAC?
I feel like HUAC hadn't like made its big impact yet. Like maybe they hadn't had the hearings. Like they're making the lists. I don't know, maybe. Does anyone else out there know what we're talking about, or is this just Connor and I and like a couple of nerds?
So here's what's interesting about this issue. I thought Earl Rath, who is this movie star character, he's a little Clark Gable-ish, although he's also a little bit, what's his name? Roman Holiday guy.
Gary Cooper?
No.
I don't know.
Kill a Mockingbird. Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, it's gone. I know exactly who you mean.
I watched Roman Holiday over the break, and I'm just dumb right now. But then Clark Gable shows up in this issue, so I was confused.
Well,
but.
And here's the question. So basically, you know, we're moving the story forward. We're meeting more people. We're getting a little bit more about the character's past. And basically, this story really is a collection of moments, I think, more than it is a lot of necessary. There is plot movement, definitely, but I'd be hard-pressed to tell you that there was sort of a beginning, middle, and end to this, to the story in this issue, I guess.
Gregory Peck,
there you go. Yeah, Atticus Finch.
Idiot.
Is this the first time that we have been introduced to real people in this story? Because in this is Clark Cable, Ronald Reagan, that might be all. I'm trying to remember, but like
there's a photo of Bogart, there's a photo of Lauren Bacall, there's a photo of Ronald Reagan. Mm-hmm. They've been mentioned. I mean, it's clearly the real Hollywood that this takes place in. This is a bit more vignette-ish, but it's also kind of fits the story of this Hollywood screenwriter who woke up next to a dead body and is trying to remember what happened that night, and so things are coming back to him in flashes and at random moments, and so that's kind of how it's structured. I love this book. I mean, if you're talking about a book that's more written more for me, I don't know what book that would be, but a Golden Age of Hollywood murder mystery, mm-hmm. you know, with real characters, and there's a little bit of World War II in here when the writer remembers how he was. He did a film with Clark Gable about the war. He did a documentary in the war, which was a real documentary, mm-hmm. but obviously saw some shit. And so I loved it.
Worked with John Ford, who also shot those. John Ford actually shot them, I think, in the Flying Fortresses, like we're seeing here. And of course, you know who else worked in that corps? Stan Lee.
Jack Kirby. Oh, all right.
No. Jack Kirby was in Patton's Third Army. Jack Kirby didn't take the desk job. Stan Lee, Stan Lee wrote cartoons of like how to avoid venereal disease,
right,
and like that kind of thing, and like instructional stuff. No, Jack Kirby, he killed Nazis.
So, sorry. I love this. This, in addition to Velvet, I think that I was thinking about this after I finished reading this issue. Was that once Brubaker left Marvel, where I feel like, and I don't want to insult him, but I feel like he was coasting a little bit towards the end of his Marvel run. He obviously did some of the best. He did some of the best work we've read in the life of this show at Marvel, notably with Captain America.
He did what I would consider to be, I think, the best series at Marvel of that decade.
Right. But I think by then you could tell he was kind of done with those, you know, those stuff. But
and
he's been.
It felt right. It wasn't bad, but it didn't have the crap. Where's the next one? Feeling
right.
I think.
But now that he's fully on an Image and he's doing Velvet and the Fade Out, and I didn't love Fatal, but lots of people did. It just wasn't my kind of thing.
That book. I'm gonna read it because
he's clearly.
I get it. Like, this thinking just. Wow, this is the guy who we were, you know, very big fans of for a while, and I think that guy went away for a little bit, at least, you know, to me as a reader, if that's fair to say.
So he's firing on all cylinders. Between Velvet and Fade Out, I'm loving every issue, and they don't come out quite as often as other books do. I mean, this is only issue 4 of the Fade Out, and I was surprised by that to see how low the number was when I saw it, but because I feel like I've been reading it longer than 4 months. Mm-hmm. But I love it. It's Sean Phillips, who is his sleeper compadre, and the art is great. The only thing I do find distracting is now that I know that everyone he draws is pretty much based on a real person, I get distracted by that, trying to figure out who they are. Mm-hmm. But that's not a huge problem. That's probably the only and I'm grasping for a straw here to say something negative about the book or critical, but that's the only problem with this book, which is not a major problem.
I mean, the thing is, like, I'm a huge Sean Phillips fan. I have been for a long time, and he's actually working with a slightly different kind of style here. It's almost, I don't know, it's different than his previous work. It's almost a little smoother and rounder around the sides, but also more chunky with the brush, if that's possible at the same
time. There's a gorgeous page of the memory that the screenwriter has, where it's almost, it looks like airbrushed, almost.
Yeah, the bombers?
No, I'm talking about when he remembers the girl smoking the cigarette. Right.
I love that page. I like the body language and the sort of them sitting next to each other, and it was beautiful.
It's just like, whoa, where did that come from? So it's a gorgeous looking book. You know, Brubaker's. He loves to write this stuff. This is his milieu, and if you like Golden Age of Hollywood. I mean, this book is almost about Hollywood as much as it is about this mysterious murder.
Oh, sure. And also a version of Hollywood. Like, you know, this is where we're talking about the studio system at a time. And this is a very different Hollywood than sort of the one that we know now or the one that exists in the 80s. This is a version of that, you know, glamour factory, which is how I learned about it in film school. You know, they're trying to present this sort of facade of glamour. And then what was really going on behind it, you know.
Yeah, and how the studios ran all the everything in town, which they still pretty much do, but more overtly. And yeah, and how everything was completely manufactured, which it still kind of is, but
well, the difference,
in mean, a much more controlled way, much more systematic way than it is
the
now.
Main, if you want your lesson, I guess, in media, one of the main differences between then and now is the mogul system. And the mogul system would be, you know, now all of the studios are owned by giant conglomerates that have shareholders and boards and blah, blah, blah. Back then, you know, the studios were usually run by a person, a mogul, whether they were a Warner of
Jack
the Warner Brothers family or, you know, there was Lou Wasserman who was just put in charge, maybe involved with the mob. I don't know. I'm not saying it one way or another. But, like, there was a guy, and that guy sort of ran everything. In this, you know, story, that guy, you know, he gets the women and he does what he wants with them until they're destroyed. And, you know, that's been a major factor in this story. And so it's just a different feel of a thing that happened. Just to touch real quickly again on Sean Phillips, I think as we go through these years and years of talking about comics and thinking about what we really like about them, there's a style that is sort of there's a couple of things that I like, and this like you see if you look at Sean Phillips's work, you can see where the brush was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like it's the same thing with like Gabe Hardman is another one of those where like you just see like he plops the brush down in a way and it's clearly a brush mark, you know, but it just works so well and this guy's been doing it for so long that I mean the book is beautiful. Like that's a style that I love. Chris Somney's another example of that. His is a really smooth and refined version of that, but it's the same thing. Whereas like Sean Phillips, it's almost messy, but also everything exactly where it's supposed to be. Michael Lark is another one where he's a little more photorealistic version of it. But I love this, and it's this kind of style that this is the kind of thing that you don't get as much in a Marvel book. You'll see them every once in a while, but they won't stick around like this, and you don't get to see them do a huge. And even when you think about like how much Sean Phillips we've gotten to read, and he's you know he's still doing it. Like he's one of the best storytellers too. God, it's a good look. And even like that cover. Look at that cover. Like
it's a great cover.
The painting and the.
The most important lesson is if you get invited back to the table with Bogey and Houston, you go. I mean, you go.
You go.
If Clark Gable says, "Hey, I'm smoking cigars with Bogey and Jack Houston," go.
John Houston?
John Houston. Sorry.
I think maybe it was John Houston and not John Ford, who was who's doing the documentaries. Now that I think about it.
Well.
Sorry.
I'm disappointed in you.
Well, I wasn't actually a film.
We're still getting back up to speed, you know.
That's true.
That's my excuse for everything. This was my pick of the week, also, by the way.
Okay, yeah. I figured, actually. Did you read Ant-Man?
Yes.
Did you like Ant-Man?
I did like Ant-Man. This is the new book from Nick Spencer, late of Superior Foes, which Paul and Josh loved so much.
Did you not read
I read the first six or seven, and I have them. I just haven't I haven't had found time to finish them. I liked it. I think the problem is I don't really care about Scott Lang.
He came along at a time that I wasn't really reading. Like, his whole thing happened before I was into anything.
No, it was when you were doing... It was just we weren't reading those books.
It was
when Kirkman was at Marvel.
Uh-huh. No. But that was...
Yeah,
different.
But he came in after that.
But he did.
He was
the
dead.
Irredeemable Ant-Man, which is a different
character. Well, that's why when Scott Lang was dead, then he came back after that. So you were reading comics...
I wasn't reading
when he first came around, that's when Hawkeye died.
Okay, not like that.
And then he was gone for Kirkman's book, and then he came back after. So you were around when he came back.
So
just one of the books you were reading.
Here's what I thought about this. I liked it a lot as a piece of work, I suppose. Spencer did a really good job at building up a character who I don't really know anything about in terms of introduction, but also having him exist in this world and having a history and it's funny because his daughter is the Young Avengers Cassie Stature,
and it feels like they really de-aged her in this book.
Yeah, it feels like that's not a thing in this book.
Well, I saw him on Twitter say she still has her powers, but she was in middle school in this book, and I thought she was as a young Avenger, like high school, or like a 16-year-old.
I thought he wrote a really good Tony Stark. I liked the scenes in the apartment. I liked the whole deal with it. And here's the rub, though. At the end, I kind of felt like, well, what did we do all that for? Mm-hmm. Was it just to get to know him? Because if the plot is to get you
story is that Scott Lang is trying to get the job of head of security at Stark whatever subsidiary it was, the joke was about. And he's up against a bunch of other like D-list heroes, including I think the Beetle, who was in Superior Foes. Was that what she was in?
Yeah.
And so the whole issue is a heist of him trying to break into, because that's the final test as to who can break in and get this, get this information out of Stark Enterprises or Industries or whatever it is. And so that's the whole issue. And finally, he does it. And then when he does win the job, he has to give it up because his ex-wife is taking Cassie to Florida from New York. She moved to Miami, so he decides to move with them. Mm-hmm. And I don't really want to read about a story in Florida, about a down-in-his-luck superhero in Florida. I'm not really interested.
I don't know, but at the same time, I thought that all of the emotional beats and everything rang true.
Yeah, it was good.
If anything, the only thing, the ex-wife was a little one-dimensional, which seems to be a thing that's happening in good comics lately. Because we read Birthright, and some of that stuff. Like, it's a little...
Oh, look. Mm-hmm. They're evil. That's what I've learned about ex-wives through media reading. I don't have an ex-wife, so I don't know. I wanted to keep reading the book where he was the head of security at Stark.
I did too.
That's the book I want to read.
Yeah. I agree, and that is totally what I came out with, because I was like, okay, I like this. This is interesting. This the guy who's over his head in a job that has a eccentric boss, and
he's not that kind of person. He lives in a horrible one room apartment, and he's a down and out guy, and now he's flying high with a bunch of people who, that's what I was interested in, and continuing the down and out story in Miami is not really what I'm curious about, but.
Yeah, well, I assume you have to assume that the reason that they did that was, I guess that's what the movie. I haven't watched the trailer.
Well, the movie's in San Francisco.
Okay.
But I don't want to discount it. It was a good comic. It was really well drawn. I liked the art a lot. If you like Ant-Man, I think you'll probably like this book. If you like Superior Foes, I'm sure you'll like this book. I think tonally it seemed somewhat similar.
Yeah.
It's very funny, and so. I just don't, premise-wise, I'm not really so much interested in the main character and that kind of thing. But
and also, like, when he says it's funny, like, it's not funny like Superior Foes was,
right?
At all, it doesn't have that tone. That sort of like
you know what kind of annoyed me was he's kind of dumb.
I like that
Scott Lang.
They never
and
are.
I was like, I don't really interested in reading about a dumb guy.
I liked him better than Eric O'Grady. I never liked that character.
I don't think I ever read a comic with Eric O'Grady in it, so I couldn't.
You didn't read did you read the Irredeemable one?
I didn't read that series, no.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I never really liked Ant-Man, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't really
have... In any incarnation.
It's funny, I saw somebody comment the other day, like, man, Michael Douglas really, really nailed Hank Pym, and I was like, I couldn't tell you what Hank Pym is. And I've been reading comics a long time, a lot of Hank Pym comics.
I can tell you what he is, but that'll start a flame war.
No, I mean, but even so, like, that's just one way to tell the story about him. Like, there's not, like, a definitive Hank Pym. Like, there's a bunch of... Like, he's a pretty malleable character because there's not, like, a single...
Fairly certain he's going to be playing Michael Douglas as Hank Pym. That's what I'm pretty certain about. So I'm excited because I like Michael Douglas. But anyway, I just, whatever. There wasn't... I thought if the book had ended 10 pages earlier, I would have been really happy with it. But it didn't, so... Birthright number 4, I'm still loving this book, and now that we're sort of into the meat of the story, it's getting interesting.
Yeah, and they actually do. I was a little harsh on it. They do have a moment where they sort of add a little dimension to the ex-wife. You know, she's trying to be the responsible one and blah, blah. And trust me, that happens. The reason that this book is on this list right now to talk about it, because it's true. We have talked about it a lot, and we've sort of covered a lot of bases with it. But there's a moment in this book that I was really, really impressed with, and it's when they go into the store and the kid, the giant barbarian kid, has a rage fight, and the woman behind the desk is like, "Yeah, my son was like that when he got back too." And I was like, "Oh my god, that's brilliant!"
Yeah,
it's a PTSD story, and I just thought that's a really simple. And they didn't like hammer it in or anything, like. But it's a really simple, effective way to sort of frame the context of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked that because it takes a thing that's completely whacked out and it totally grounds it. Again, if they labor that point into the ground, which it didn't look like they did at all, that'll be silly. But I really liked that moment. I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, that was a way for him to cover the giant raging barbarian was to go with the idea that he was a vet. But I like this. I also like that the fact that the guy, the father, in his phone, it's not the ex-wife, it's the wife.
Yeah, which was interesting. You're right.
So I mean that they are broken up, but it's interesting that he didn't change that. And the photo of her is still their family photo. So clearly there's lots of interesting layers going on here. And also the cop that she's dating is kind of a dick. So
yeah, no, he totally is. But then there's the other bit where like the brother says, he's like, "Yeah, dad's not good at listening."
He's not.
It's gonna be his turn to talk, and I was like, "That's like he's like Josh Williamson has really built up some excellent family dynamics here."
Yeah, like, no one is except for the I guess the older brother who was now the younger brother is sort of all good.
Yeah, but we don't even know that.
Yeah, which was so far.
And then I think he has to be. I don't think you can.
Josh, all children are perfect angels.
Trust me.
Their souls are corrupted.
Oh, no, they learn to lie quick. the thing is, they're terrible at it for a while.
They're little con artists.
And then the I guess the last thing that I liked is that the father and the other son were witness to the magic part. So
now they know that this is not
right. Now we don't have to deal with that. We don't have to, you know, go, "Really, guys, it's happening." Like, sure, they're gonna follow him along. That's out of the way. Okay, so this is a real thing, and they can all just accept it and then move on with the story like that. Totally cool with that too.
Yeah. So they confront the first person he's been tracking. We know them to be good. He tells them he's evil, and they have a confrontation. So this is good. This book is good. And I'm always excited.
The parlance, for people who need to understand it, they found the first piece of the broadcast energy transmitter.
Right.
That's how
the BET.
Yeah. It's the BET story model that is basically all of movie and TVs now. That's
when
the
Snake Eyes come in. You know what always annoyed me as a kid watching G.I. Joe was, and we'll get to war stories in a minute. This is the connective tissue to the next book, is that, you know, when you're reading the comics, Snake Eyes is the main character. He's the hero of the comic. And then in the cartoon, it was Stupid Duke with his yellow flat top.
Did you read the comics before you watched the cartoon?
I was concurrent.
See, I never read the comics. I didn't read the comics until I was in my 20s.
I read the comics in kindergarten. Reading about Vietnam in kindergarten.
Yeah, that was not a good idea.
I remember distinctly passing around G.I. Joe 26, the Snake Eyes origin issue, in the cafeteria at kindergarten, and that was the issue where it was mostly taking place in Vietnam. That was too much for us in 1982. But that annoyed me because as a kid, and Alex, you know, Snake Eyes is the best. And then in the broadcast energy transmitter story, he's barely in it, and even Spirit gets more play than Snake Eyes does. And I like Spirit. Don't get me wrong. Spirit is cool.
I think that the animators had a hard time with the dude with no voice because so much of it is laid down ahead of time in voice tracks.
They had to celebrate the Aryan, is what I'm saying. And that leads us to War Stories number four.
Wasn't anyway.
No, Duke.
Oh, no, that's
they even gave Duke Scarlet. All right, so now War Stories number four. This is the fourth issue. This is the first new story arc. This is part one of three of Children of Israel is the subtitle.
I can see Snake Eyes dancing at that party right now. The wolf.
And that wolf could dance, man.
You're right. Denver.
So what's interesting about these War Stories books, and I know, Josh, you of course, absolutely caught up over the break and now are current on War Stories, right? Right. Okay. Just so we establish that you're a fraud. Okay. So, the War Stories series through various publishers has been 95% about World War II, right? I think there's been, I think there was a World War I story in there, but for the most part, it was World War II story. So this issue opens in Warsaw, 1939. A little boy from the town is fascinated by the German tank, and the German tank driver, you know, lets him climb on the tank and lets him look around. He looks on the inside. He talks to the tank drivers, and then the commander comes over and says, "Get him off because he's a Jewish kid and he can't be around the tank." Flash forward to October 1973, and now we're in the Yom Kippur War. So now this is what's interesting is it's a totally different, almost contemporary story. This is the Arab-Israeli War. Many names this war went by, but this was the war when Egypt and Syria tried to invade Israel. And so now it's about this kid growing up, and he's his own tank commander. And this issue actually is the night before the war starts. It's him and his tank crew just on their defensive position, sort of. Some of them are bored, you know, because they're not really doing anything. And then the invasion happens on the last page. So it's actually, I love his World War II stuff, but it was actually really interesting to go, oh, so now we're looking at something completely different, which is fun.
That's very true. And we haven't even, I mean, they've all been the standard war.
Right.
You know, they've been.
You know who's bad.
Have they all been World War II?
I'm pretty sure there's a World War I story in there. I'm pretty sure. But I think it's been 99% World War II stories.
Yeah, because there's so many fronts. Not that there's not a lot of World War I to do.
There's one thing I really miss, and I don't know if this is a digital thing or if it's in the paper version, but he used to do a little one-page essay on what he was writing about. Mm-hmm. Remember that? And like when he did he remember when it was with Dynamite and he did the Night Witches? There was like one-page thing where he wrote about the Night Witches in like a prose piece.
Kind of, yeah.
Sort of explain the background of what the story was, and that those haven't been in these Avatar stories, although I don't know if they're in the paper versions or not. But I always enjoyed his prose writing on the war. But This is good, and I think if you're a War Stories fan and you're looking for something slightly different than what you normally get from Garth Ennis, I was enthralled. I didn't really love the first arc of this, but this issue was fantastic. So I recommend it highly. And I don't know much about this war. I actually had to look it up. I actually stopped in the middle and realized this was not going to flash back to World War II again. So I was like, shit, I better figure this out. So I did some Googling and read about the war and then continued to read about the... I mean, I knew about the war. I've heard of it. I just didn't know the details of it.
Cause for a lot of people, that's going to feel like too much work. But for you...
For you and me, man, that's the shit.
Yeah, that's the shit. I could do with more World War I stories. I've learned a lot about that.
I don't want to read any World War I stories.
It's apparently quite bad.
It's a butcher shop.
The place you wanted to be.
None of those places are the place you want to be. That one is like the top.
When my wife asked me a stupid question, then I explained to her the difference between World War I and all the wars that came before it, and like halfway through the explanation, I think, I sound like an idiot right now. And she doesn't care.
She's going through her Rolodex of divorce lawyers.
Yeah, no, she's just like, she's checked out. I'm like, mechanized warfare.
The mud. The trench warfare.
Trenches were only part of it. By 1917, the trenches weren't even the factor. The mud was a problem.
Yeah, well. Anyway. So that was War Stories number 4 from Avatar and Garth Ennis. And I loved it. It was fantastic. And if you all like comics about war but never read any of Garth Ennis' war stories who were published at Vertigo and in DC and then at Dynamite for a while and now at Avatar, you can find those old collections anywhere. And we'd prefer you get them at ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can find a little link to Amazon proper and it takes you there. And any piece of your sale goes to us. And we appreciate everyone who did that over the holidays. Many, many, many of you did. And we appreciate that. That's how we keep the lights on. That's how we keep Josh in World War II books. World War I books all comes through the Amazon account. Josh siphons off a little off the top himself, takes a little beak, puts wets his beak a little bit, and buys
gotta
his books.
Gotta have my beaver. Need my beaver.
So, wow, that was a
historian
deep
joke.
Wow, good one.
I was like,
did you read the D-Day book?
No, not yet. I have carried that book with me across the country multiple times.
Yes, I'm actually looking at it across the room on the bookshelf. I read it late last year, and it was good.
Yeah, no, I've no doubt. I'm just I'm in the middle of this History of the Civil War audiobook. It's quite extensive.
I see. All right, well.
It's Shelby Foote.
You can also get that at ifanboy.com/Amazon. Anything you want, we appreciate everyone does that. And ifanboy.com/registration is where you can become an iFanboy member for $3 a month or $30 a year. And all of you people, you wonderful people, as we start the new year, we thank everyone who did that last year and everyone who will do it going forward. It makes iFanboy possible. So let's move on now to a book about shitting your pants.
Deadly Class number 10 is about shitting your pants. That's all I had. No. I think that that I liked this because it was sort of the moment where the protagonist whose name I can't remember any characters' names ever. That's a problem. But like, you know, he's finally starting to feel good about himself, and he makes a bad choice. And you know,
he's a teenage boy. Teenage boys are stupid.
I know, and I don't even think it's necessarily the wrong choice. But you know, like he's got no. He can't control it.
I don't fault him for his choice.
You wouldn't. But you know, they have to go on this raid, and he makes the two girls angry, and both of the girls are killers. So it's difficult.
Well, they're angry because he's dating one. He slept with the other.
Yeah,
that's why they're angry. It'll happen. But he was he's also like what, 15, 16? So
yeah,
you know, no one's thinking straight at that age.
Yeah, but then he had to poop.
We spent an inordinate amount of time on that part. That was my only real note in this issue. You know,
well, I mean, it's probably the most extensive diarrhea page. It's two pages of pooping. Well, let's see. Well, okay, we'll go three pages if you count the
three, and then there's a fallout.
Yeah, yeah.
The point is, they've been tracking. Yeah, they've been tracking this dude, especially in the comic book community. Mm-hmm. They've been tracking this dude, the ex-student from their school who had killed people, and they're finally going to make their raid in his place and kill him and his friends, and it goes very, very badly. So that part was great. This book continues to be great. Wes Craig continues to be awesome. It was more diarrhea than I was expecting from a comic. That's what I dug into my books this week.
I feel like you may be being a little bit, you know. Little too sensitive.
No one expects the diarrhea or the Spanish Inquisition in their comics. Wow.
The soft cushion. That's what he could have used. The soft cushion. It's the thing, though, is that like because it's a high school book, you know, I like the juxtaposition of the two worst things that can happen are you're killed by your psycho ex-girlfriend who cheated on, or you shit yourself in front of a bunch of people. Now,
well, I mean, you're right. It's high school books, so it's all about humiliation, right? And and angst. So I get
Those two things are equal, really, to the 16-year-old mind.
Right. Well, you wouldn't live down either one.
No, no. One time I was taking a final in. Anyway, I forgot.
So there you go.
No one caught me.
Hellboy and the BPRD.
I'm just saying I had to make a choice.
Hellboy and we all make choices. Hellboy, the BPRD number 2952. Is that what this is? Is that how that's read?
That's how they wrote it. It's in. If you look on the Diamond preview, it's Hellboy and the BPRD number 2, 1952.
Someone needs to go down or up to, were they in Portland? Where's Dark Horse these days? Go there and start shaking people because their numbering system is stupid. Just shake them, take them by the shoulders and shake them.
Okay, either way, regardless, point is. This is the best BPRD/Hellboy series I have read in quite a few years. This is the first adventure of Hellboy going out with a team of BPRD guys, and they go to this, I think they're in Mexico, trying to investigate a demon who's out killing people. And the guys on the BPRD, like we're so used to seeing stories where like they love Hellboy. These guys don't like him. They don't know why he's there. He doesn't have anything to do. He doesn't understand what to do. And then at the end, there's a fantastic cliffhanger. It's really interesting and it's good. And I really like seeing Hellboy in this context. We've only ever seen him in gung-ho kick-ass form or little kid form, and this is actually a real story of in between. And
is he a hindrance?
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, kind of like they're not used to having him, so they don't need him. So you know, anytime you add something to something that works, it's like, well, what am I going to do with this?
Is he any good at?
We don't know yet.
Doing stuff?
No, and we don't know yet. Like he kind of gets into a little bit of a fight in this one, but you know, he doesn't win. So No, it's a really cool sort of that, you know, middle position to be in, or early, I guess.
Right.
And it's just drawn really well, and it's a good book. I like it. Go get it.
Good.
Okay.
Justice League 3000, number 13. Now, it's funny about this book
there are 13 issues of this.
I dropped off of it after like six or seven. I liked it, but I didn't love it, and I was reading a lot of books, so they keep adding more Image books, so something's got to give. And so I dropped out, even though I did like it's Giffen and DeMatteis and Howard Porter, so it's like sort of a multi-generational Justice League all-star team. And it's about clones in the future, in the year 3000, people who have been, they've taken the old Justice League DNA and they've cloned new versions of these characters. And it's kind of funny because it's them, but it's not them. They don't have the upbringing. Superman can't fly, but he keeps forgetting that, so he keeps jumping out windows. but it's just funny. And what reason why I came back was because they had brought back Blue Beetle and Booster Gold from the old Giffen and DeMatteis books. So it's these pre-52 characters, and they were in cryostasis or, you know, comic book science doesn't really matter. The point is they were discovered, and now they've been woken up in the year 3000, and they were always the best characters in the Giffen and DeMatteis Justice League run anyway. And in this issue, now they've found Ice, who was also a character from back then because she's an immortal ice god, and apparently we're bringing back Fire. So slowly but surely, they're bringing in all these pre-reboot characters into this book, which is interesting to me. I think it's because it's set in the future, no one really cares. And who's going to tell Keith Giffen not to do something? So
doing vaudeville.
Right, so I can't not hear that in my head every time I see his name. It's been
long enough now that most people listening probably don't
know. No, that was wrong, that. The first time we ever interviewed Keith Giffen on the video show. We were talking about his old run, and he said they were just doing vaudeville. And it's a fun book. I don't know what's going on because I missed all those issues. They're apparently locked in a battle with Etrigan the Demon, so that's cool. But I find it interesting. I like the premise of the idea of these clone heroes, and the Flash kept dying, so they kept having to reclone the Flash, and now it's a girl. I like that part, and I like the creative team, and I like bringing back these old characters. I just find it fascinating that they're allowed to do this because, you know, no one, although they're doing it in this transition story that we're going to see when DC moves offices, but I just think that's interesting that they're allowed to play those characters.
Yeah.
I think those guys are like, they're like kind of like royalty. They can do whatever they want.
Which is, as long as eventually you have to sell books.
I don't know how to sell. I don't pay attention to that stuff anymore. So, but I just, you know, it's been a year. It's respectable. Yeah.
That's fine.
And we'll see how many characters they can bring back before the book gets canceled or someone stops them.
Well, all right.
That's always the good indicator. This was a small week of comics. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
I didn't have a ton to read. So that's all the books we wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
There were other books we read. We just had nothing to say about them. Some might argue we had nothing to say about the previous books.
There was a lot of stuff in there that had nothing to do with it. I don't think anyone can deny that.
Maybe that's
our fault.
Everyone's entitled to their opinion. Doesn't mean it's
choices.
Right. We all make choices. So go to fmway.com. You can find the post on this show, and you can talk about other books we didn't talk about and
Swingers
or read.
Swingers is 18 years old.
I know, but I just watched it again the other day, and it's still very funny.
It's a good script.
It really is, especially if you haven't seen it in a while.
Yeah.
And you pick up on things now that you didn't typically before.
Uh-huh.
So
Maid was not a good movie.
It took me, I think, 5 years to get the Age of Enlightenment joke. Seriously. I'd watch him go, I don't understand what he's saying. And then it finally clicked. I was like, oh, you can have him at any time. He wants from the Age of Enlightenment.
Yeah. It's a specific joke.
It's a very specific, it's a good joke. Once I just didn't get it for a long time.
It's not a good joke in that context, though.
No, that's the point.
Voltaire.
That was a good joke in that context. All right, let's do a bunch of emails because
what the hell?
Why not? We're in charge.
Hey, all right, Sam writes in, says, "Hey, fanboy, I've been." A lot of these emails are a little older. We're going to the backlog, so there you go. Just in case
we had a lot in the backlog.
Yeah. Hey, fanboy, I've really been enjoying the Miracle Man reprints, but during our brief thinking session, 3.5 hours, nothing major. Good, nice work, Sam. Yep, I'll take a moment. Okay, I realize that you've not mentioned them. Are you getting any of them? I've never read the original versions, but I've also been struck by the production of the books in general. Art recoloring, original pencils, removing Moore's name are all really interesting. I know you did a video show on their content way back when, and I just wondered if you were rereading these. No. But that's not the end. I guess that isn't. I mean, like the question.
Next
is,
email.
No, I mean like it came.
No,
up,
why
are
why
aren't
you reading them? Why?
Well, I mean, my
well, first
answer
of all, read
is
them.
We read them, and it wasn't all that long ago, and I don't think we liked them that much.
No, I disagree. I like them, but.
I liked them, but it wasn't like I came away and I thought, this is amazing. It was one version of the story that Moore told a bunch of times, and he didn't tell it as well as he did with Watchmen.
I think it's a different story. But,
it's a theme, though. It's a deconstruction of a trope, and it's a thing. And for whatever reason, I think it's like the thing sometime that originates the thing gets copied so many times after that when you go back to the original version, it's not as strong because it doesn't exist with that originality. I think that happens. I just had a really good example of this. I mean, I guess it'd be one of those things where, like, if you had somebody sit down and watch an episode of, like, All in the Family right now, it would feel like it was really cliched, except it was the thing that made up all the cliches.
I mean, actually, that for you. For me, it's about the other stuff. It's like, I don't want to read it recolored. I don't want to read it with Elmore's name off of it. I don't, you know, like.
No, I agree with that stuff too. But you know,
like someone has who ended up with those original issues.
I have some of them.
Anyway, I've read them. I've read probably 90% of them originally, and I might. I'll think about getting the collection when it finally comes out. But I don't need to read them month to month. I've already read them.
I don't think I do have them.
Probably Ron, son of a bitch.
Yeah, exactly. We should find
him. Or ransack his house.
Oh, they're not worth it.
I don't care. I'm going to be up there this weekend. I'm going to ransack it.
You should ransack it anyway. It's not very big. You can ransack it in 20 minutes.
So my thing is I don't know. I don't want to read it month to month, that book I've already read. So I would like to have a collection of it, but I also don't necessarily want a Marvelized collection of it.
Yeah, those things are not those are not value adds, I suppose. I don't like that they took Alan Moore's name off. And if he wants his name off of it, like, I'd rather read it in the context that it came out with, because I think that's much
better. What's interesting to me is that they did all these things to change it, but they didn't change the name back to the original name, which was changed only because of them in the first place. Because originally the character was Marvel Man, but they had to change it because of Marvel. And so now Marvel owns it, but they didn't change it back to Marvel Man. It's just interesting to me.
Yeah.
But that's why I'm not getting them. I've read them.
Yeah, I don't know the point. I guess there's enough stuff coming out that, like.
But most people haven't read them. That's why that's the point. The point is.
No, and I totally get that, and they should. But it's also, I think, interesting to sort of read them in that historical context.
Well, you know what's interesting is I do remember that show that we did, the video show on Miracle Man. You can probably still find that somewhere on the internet. And I remember predicting at the end that we wouldn't be received. Like, no one talks about them. No one talks about them.
No one talks about them.
And that's pretty much the prediction we made on the show because, as you said before, they've been the combination of they were the ones. This was one of the books that started everything, but also. For years and years and years, this was the book, right? It wasn't available anywhere. You couldn't buy it. And it was like this Holy Grail book that was spoken in hushed tones of Miracle Man. It was something you had to hunt like Indiana Jones. And I knew that once people actually read it, they probably wouldn't live up to the decades-long hype that was generated from these outside elements. And I think that's probably what has happened.
Also, like the people who would be interested in it as a piece of work that exists in the place and time that it did, probably found a way to read it before. Mm-hmm. So the people who were left, who were waiting for it to be reprinted, they might be enjoying it, I guess. That's sort of presumptive, but I feel like, you know, like the real scholars of the art form or whatever, like those people, you know, or the self-styled scholars, they're going to be the ones who are already would have gone out and found it and read it, you know.
Right.
They had those conversations already. It's not. They did the birth issue already, and I didn't see anybody say anything.
Right. And there was, I mean, the rape, the male, you know, the superhero rape issue. I mean, like, none of it's been talked about. This book was talked about more when you couldn't get it.
Yeah.
Now that you can get it, no one talks about it.
Yeah.
And that says something.
It was so bleak. It was really like, ugh.
This next email, I'm going to blame you on, Josh. This is just be prepared. Aaron writes and says, hey. I love the show, but I'm not much of a comic book reader. I love Watchmen and Craig Thompson's books, Ellipses, Ellipses, Ellipses. Could you guys recommend one really good comic that is well worth my money? I'd love to buy a great comic this holiday season.
He does not specify. Maybe it's the Arbor Day.
It's President's Day season. We've got some time.
Valentine's Day to President's Day, that era.
I'm sorry, Aaron.
Maybe he's a teacher. He's got that week off.
Josh has failed you, and I'm sorry that.
Well, hold on. Now let's determine. Let's agree on terms.
All right.
One really good comic.
Just
what does
one.
That mean? Yeah, what does comic mean? Volume? A series of volumes? An issue?
Well, I'm gonna go Sherlock Holmes on this. I'm going Sherlock Holmes on this. He's talking about Watchmen. He's talking about Craig Thompson's books, and he's not much of a comic reader, which tells me he is like most people in that he interfaces with comic books through collections.
Yes.
He doesn't go to the comic store on Wednesday. Doesn't download a book, Comixology. He buys Walking Dead in volumes, as most people who read Walking Dead do. Mm-hmm. So let's find a OGN, one story in one volume that he can. What's if we had to tell him one OGN to buy? What would it be?
I want to not say superheroes.
It's got to be worth his money, Josh.
Because he's already read The Watchmen. So if we're talking about a one story kind of thing, I mean, I'm gonna say
no box office poison.
Oh, I wouldn't have said that.
Based right, on well, you always used based to on say Craig that. Thompson. So
it's still one of my it's one of my favorite books of all time. But I wouldn't have said that. I mean, the thing is, it can be so many things. That would be perfect.
What about bang for your buck? Like Essex County is in one volume. That's a lot of bang for your buck.
That's it's basically far, three volumes. That's too far to one side of this continuum, though.
Okay.
So on one side you have The Watchmen, which is the great deconstructionist work that broke down everything that superheroes was to the extent that they didn't really need to do anymore.
Right.
Everything
but they did.
That was an also ran. And then on the one side is sort of the Craig Thompson is sort of the big auto bio guy.
Right.
So what exists that's in between there? I mean, now you could
deconstructed autobiography of a superhero.
I was going to say, I mean, like All-Star Superman. That's one of the first things that came to my mind.
That is actually a very good combination of the two.
Mm-hmm.
It's
superhero, but it's the opposite. It's almost like a reaction to Watchmen.
And
he wrote The Watchman, so maybe that's a different thing.
It's very personal, like Craig Thompson's book. I can see why people would think that I'm stretching it with that, but I feel like if you're talking about the marriage of a deconstructed modern superhero book and a personal story about a human being, I think that's a good because at his heart, also Superman is a personal story about Superman. I mean, the amazing things he does is almost background noise to the actual story. So
we're gonna say a couple of things. That's the first thing that came to mind. So
that's a good one.
Thing that came to mind.
You kind of blew me away with that one.
Okay.
I think you could also I had
use
joke
the
once.
New Frontier in that same. But I think Superman's a better option.
Well, that New Frontier is a good. And are you just going down the list of like your absolute editions? What are you doing?
No, I'm not even in that room. I wish I was, and I do not have the All-Star Superman one. I have the.
New Frontier is really good if you want sort of your more traditional superhero,
the best
it could be.
That's why I said it because I think it's that story.
And that makes it sound like we don't like traditional superhero. We obviously don't. We obviously do. But that's like the best that you could find of like the traditional. And whenever anybody asks me for like a really good superhero story, it's always. In fact, I just a couple of months ago recommended it to somebody. Like I still constantly recommend it. It's like the best pure superhero story.
Yeah. And you'll be able to recommend it forever, timelessly.
Yeah. I wish Aaron had given us some more information on what kind of stories.
No,
he likes.
I like this. I like this. Part of me wanted to say Bone because it's a whole.
I still never read Bone.
It's a whole other kind of thing. It's like pure cartooning. It's a huge epic story done in a style that seems to be antithetical to that. You know, it's sort of like it starts off. It feels kind of light and silly, and it gets bigger. You know, as you keep going. And then, of course, the other part of me wants to say volumes 1 through 9 of Preacher.
Well, there you go.
I mean,
really,
like if, If I wasn't limiting myself to one book, that'd be my first answer, because that is neither of the things, and it's the other, you know, out of the last 20, 30 years, it's the other great work in my
life. Well, I kind of want to say The Dark Knight then, because Returns, because if you love Watchmen, those you're talking about the two, those are the two books that set the course for all superhero comics that have come since.
Yeah. I mean, it's just in the same track. Let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Does The Dark Knight Returns work without having a context for Batman?
I think everyone has a context for Batman, though.
That's a good point, but it's always a different context, which is interesting.
Yeah, but it's just the basic context of who Batman is. I think everyone
now
has that now.
And the other question is Dark Knight Returns, it was at one point sort of the ultimate end extreme version of Batman, but now is it that, but in the context of the time period with which it existed?
I think so, because
The Watchmen definitely is that now.
I know someone who just read it for the first time recently and loved it.
Yeah, I don't think it loses anything, but
I mean that's the thing, is that you worry if it's too of a time and place, but I don't think it is.
Mm-hmm. You know what's funny is that most all those things that like New Frontier is definitely of a time. It's 1962,
3. Also is Dark Knight.
Yeah.
It's very 80s. I mean, I think I think you can enjoy it, and you obviously you can if you didn't live through that time period. But I think if you did, it's even more.
Okay. What about this? Cool. Would you recommend Batman Year One over that?
Good question. No. Simply just going off what he liked already.
Okay.
I would recommend it in conjunction. Read one and then the other, but. If I was just going to offer him one, I'm always going to say Dark Knight over Year One, just by a nose. That's the one I prefer over the other. But I think we've given him some good options.
Yeah, some single volume ones, some larger things to do. Like if you go read Dark Knight Returns, you're like, man, I could use some more of that. You can go read Batman Year One. After that, you're screwed. There's nothing else. It's all downhill. But. It is. Everything else will be 80% at most.
I think one day on the show, we should, if we're like ever having a week where we're really short on books, I need to talk through my whole Batman ennui at the moment. I'm really struggling. Yeah. Not with Snyder's book, but it creeps in. Snyder's book, well, let's not get into it. Let's just say there's a general Batman ennui happening right now.
Well, there's been a lot of Batman.
Decades. It's not right now. We're getting the show's almost over. We can't get. Let's do one more. Remember how on the website when we had daily content, we knew if we did an article about digital comics, it'd be like chum in the water, and the page views would rocket to the top of the charts. That doesn't happen so much anymore. No. But how do you say this name? Tell me, Josh.
It's Owen.
Owen from Ireland.
Yeah. Owen H.
I never would have guessed that.
I almost named, like a long time ago, I was going to name my first kid like Owen, and it was going to spell it like this. So that's how I know. But then I decided it would be really.
You didn't want to subject it to a life of just horrible. Owen.
It's okay if you're from Ireland and you do that, but if you're in America and you do that, you're being a dipshit.
Is it Ewan? No, it's Owen. Fucking.
Yeah.
Dead.
It's just Irish. It's the Irish spelling of Owen. They put in too many letters.
All right. That's what they do. So Owen says. Hey, long time, first time. I have a question here, which might not be perfectly up your alley, as most of you are not big gamers, but any input you have on this topic is greatly welcomed. Do you think the comic book industry has so far missed out on a big opportunity to expand their audience by not putting digital comics on video game handheld systems? Here are some points that I feel are relevant. Number one, devices are perfect halfway point between tablets and smartphones, more portable than the former and bigger screen sizes than the latter. Number two, clear crossover in the people who play video games and those who are open to the idea of reading comics. Number three, large install bases, Vita 9 million, 3DS 45 million, of people who carry these devices around regularly already. 45 million people carry around a 3DS all the time? Is that happening? Is that a thing?
Worldwide.
That's crazy.
Most of them are in Japan, I assume, or Korea.
Oh, okay. Point four, 3DS in particular could be used to try to bring digital comics to younger readers who've been, to some extent, priced out of the market. And number five, iPads and other tablets are very expensive, so are out of the price range for a more casual audience. Hope you answer this, even if you think this idea is incorrect. I just want to hear some different opinions on the matter, as it is not an idea I hear discussed at all, and it's something I feel is so obvious. despite this, I do realize that this might simply be a difficulty of programming.
I have responses for this.
Which is why I wanted to talk about it, because I knew you would.
Well, first of all, they tried this. I think when the PSP came out, there were comics available for it, and it was dumb. I think
I don't remember from our time at Graphically. Did we? Was that a thing? I don't remember.
I don't know, but I mean, there's a couple of sort of practical reasons that it doesn't work. One, when originally digital comics started out, they started doing the panel cutting, so they could fit it on a phone, and now they just do it as sort of an artifact of that. But it's sort of
I know a lot of people who read them that way.
Really?
A lot. Yeah. Huh. People. Well, these are the people who are more casual.
I guess.
There's a dude in my office. That's all how he reads it, even with on his big tablet.
I wonder if that's a big market though. Because what I think that what happened is that tablets overshot these devices. And he makes a point that iPads are so expensive, and I don't think that's true, because a Kindle Fire or a Samsung tablet or whatever, there's a bunch of different versions now that run Android or iOS, and they're pretty ubiquitous, and they're not any more expensive than a lot of these handheld systems, and I think that they're more ubiquitous and you can do more with them. I think that is where people are concentrating their marketing and their development dollars, because if they had to put them on these devices, each one of them has a different has a different OS, has a different way of reading, so they'd have to format the files for them differently. And my
programming is annoying.
Yeah, and my guess is that it's not worth the investment, basically, to learn how to do it, to market it, to get it to them. They've looked at it and said, you know what, we're probably not going to make our money back on this. It would be nice. They could probably pull in a couple more people, but
I really wonder how much crossover there is between video game and comic readers. I know a lot of comic readers play video games. A lot of video game players read comics.
I think that is a false assumption that because you like to play Batman in the Batman Arkham video games, that you are also going to want to read Batman comic books.
Well, clearly you're not, because the game sells a lot more copies than the comic books.
I think those are false equivalents. I believe that's
the same. It's the same assumption as since you go to see The Dark Knight, you will then come and read a Batman comic,
right? And it
which we know is false. Yeah,
right. I mean, like there's spillover. You know, there's an effect. They sold a hell of a lot of Watchmen graphic novels, but you know what they didn't make was a hell of a lot of Watchmen movie tickets. If that was true, then Iron Man would have been the biggest selling comic book of the whole decade, and it wasn't.
Well, I think the main point is there's some serious technological hurdles.
Yes.
You can't just snap your fingers and have something appear on a device. It has to be, the program has to be written, it has to be formatted correctly, it has to be coded. It's
a deal has to be made with the provider. You got to probably pay a license fee to get listed on there, or pay a portion of what you make if you do sell it. You got to reformat for that. You got to code for each one. So then you got somebody who's got to code the Sony version and then the Nintendo version.
And you've got to run a cost benefit analysis on the platform. And are you going to have enough readers to make this worth it, or did you just waste a whole lot?
I mean, how long have we been on iPads now? Almost 5 years, I think. 4.5 years, I think. And they're just starting to get to a point where they're like, okay, this is starting to work. So I remember this is the thing. Like early on, I remember uploading like a PDF, or maybe it was even like one of those CBR files to my PSP and trying to read it and just being like, well, this is dumb. Like they had, I think you could buy books through there, but it was, it was just a little tiny bit of it.
The smallest I'm going to go is an iPad mini. And I only say that because I still think the iPad is the perfect size, but the iPad mini, the resolution is so high. The retina display resolution is so good that even on the mini, the comics look fantastic. So,
I mean,
I think any smaller than that, you're running into problems, I think.
And people are better off. People are going to format their own content for those audiences on those devices. I bet. And it's chump change for the comic people, I think. And then the other side of it is it's two kind of publishers. There's the tiny little publishers. And if they're really hungry, they could maybe format it and do it and put it on there, but they're still not going to get a ton. And then there's the big fish, and they're not looking to invest in that, because both Marvel and DC, for example, are IP machines at this point. That's why they exist, and their parent companies aren't necessarily going to want them to spend that money. They spent a lot of money over the last 8-10 years trying to come up with new ways to exploit comics digitally, and most of it failed. So I think they're gonna stick to their guns and just
much like they stick to the bread and butter of the direct market for the physical copies, they're sticking to the bread and butter of Comixology, and that, you know, for the digital market, it's what they know. They can make sales projections based on these things. It's predictable, and comics isn't a big enough industry where they can take those kind of chances. Yeah, spend the
like,
kind of money.
Just go back to that old question, like, well, how come they don't advertise? Because they can't afford it, and right. then the return on investment is too low.
Yep. You know, razor thin margins as it is. So there you go, Owen, from Ireland. Thank you, Sam, Aaron, Owen, who wrote in. They did so at contact@ifanboy.com, which is where you can write us, or you can call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOY-326-2697 and tell us who you are and where you're from. Keep it around 30 seconds. And thanks. If you want to get your question or comment, usually not comments, but questions on the show, you can do either of those things, and we'll get it on. That's how you can be part of the show. It's interactive.
Wait, we're going to get it on?
We're going to get it on.
You know
I don't have any.
You know what just showed up on Netflix?
What?
The Ladies Man feature film.
Oh,
it's streaming on Netflix. I
am both excited and terrified to see that. I've never seen it.
Oh, really? It's
yeah.
not good. I mean, there's funny things in it, but it's not good.
I just love him as that character so much.
Yeah, no.
But do I love him in more than 2 minute chunks?
I don't know that you do. I know you.
Tim Meadows is the unsung comic genius of our time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just gonna say it. He's always funny. Always funny.
Did you do the first part before I brought that up? Yeah, you did, right?
No, I didn't. I said I was about to say we're just talk. This is all screwed up.
I know. It was the ladies' man did it. Michael Lark. This doesn't make sense. It still doesn't make
sense.
That
is an old podcast joke. And there's probably 5 people left who are listening back
then. I think we need to stop doing that. Except for those 5 people probably still like that a lot.
We need to come up with new material.
Oh, shit.
That's our slogan for 2015. New material.
At this time, we mean it.
This time we mean it.
Yeah, so which part am I doing? I'm lost. I'm completely
lost. Just do all three now. That's
okay,
what your
you
punishment
it.
Is.
So you want to start off, you want to go to ifanboy.com, you can comment on this show, you can hear past shows, you can look up some of those old shows we were talking about and be like, oh yeah, that joke. That wasn't really funny then, but why are they still referring to
it? But actually they can't because the shows are only available back to like 108 or something like that. You can't go back for it.
That's still hundreds of shows.
No, but I think some of these jokes are from like the first couple of years.
Wow. That's I think that's sad. Is what
Michael Lark might be that. Oh my God.
I think Michael Lark is later.
Because it was Captain America or Daredevil. Anyway, continue.
You can follow iFanboy at twitter.com/iFanboy or go to facebook.com/iFanboy where you can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out on Sunday. You can follow us individually at CS Kilpatrick, at Fuzzy Typewriter, and at J.A. Flanagan. And finally,
and it was your name too. That's what's funny about it.
It's fine. I'm not vain. I mean, I am. Finally, if you like us and you you want to help out, you can go write a review for us on iTunes because that helps a lot. Helps people find the show. And it goes, hey, look, there's hundreds of 5-star reviews here. That must mean there's some quality there. I think I will try this show. And then you'll find out, like, what the hell are they talking? They're clinging to their sad, sad pasts. Better yet, you can tell people directly about us. If somebody's looking for a podcast, say, hey, you know what? I've liked this iFanboy show for a while. I mean, they've lost a step, but it's still better than most of the stuff out there. You could introduce anybody to podcasts. That would help us always. You know, social network that shit. So
they can be like, hey, you've heard of Serial, right? Well, there are other podcasts.
Are you missing Serial in your life? There are other podcasts.
Josh and I will murder someone if that's what has to happen.
Wow.
Turn us into a murder investigation.
Whoa. I thought we were... All right. Well,
we'll talk about it after the show. We'll talk about it after the show.
I really think that we've passed the point of we'll do anything to get attention.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, we did.
Although some people need murdering.
Like if we were going to blow up, we'd already have. So
we did.
It's probably not point to kill anybody.
Be fine. I just feel like some people need it.
We blew up in the sense of like when they put a thing over a bomb to blow it up safely. Like that was our blowing up. It was like
a bomb squad?
Yeah, like the robot came over and they put the little like shelter over it and they exploded it inside there and that was like, okay, show's over, sure. Thanks. And the robot scoops it all up into its little Wally thing and rides away. And
what was the robot in the Jetsons? Just because I feel like we need more old
Rosie?
References. Rosie. Rosie comes over and sweeps it into her little hole in her stomach. And yeah.
Then Jeremy Renner walks over, takes his suit off.
Never emotes in a movie again. Until next week, my name is Connor.
He did an American Hustle. That's why I liked him.
He was really good in American Hustle.
He was. I don't remember anything about that movie except I really liked him. And I'm Josh.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.